everybody, and welcome back to Thank Godzilla It's Friday, where it is Friday, and that means it's Godzilla. My name is William Bibbiani. I am a film critic. I write for The Wrap, and gosh darned it, sorry, Godzilla darned it, everybody calls me Bibbs.
My name is Whitney Seibold. They call me the Planet Eater, and I contribute to Slash Film. Write quite a bit of articles over there.
Yeah, do you write articles about Godzilla?
Occasionally, I'll write a Godzilla article. There was a new Godzilla movie just a couple weeks ago. I wrote about that one a lot. For those who haven't gone to Slash Film, first of all, go to Slash Film. You know, give us the hits.
Oh, please. But,
especially on my articles. But it's SEO driven. It's an SEO factory. Mm. They kind of chase whatever headlines are hip at the time, and we write articles based on what's already getting clicks. Right. And it's a little bit of a mercenary way to write, but at least they give us a lot of leeway in what we write about.
Yeah.
And right now, and I don't know what's drifting through the algorithm, but classic like 60s sitcoms are still really big.
You've mentioned this before. I forget if it was on this podcast or another one, but like, weren't you writing stuff about like Petticoat Junction?
I wrote an article about Petticoat Junction. I've written a couple articles about the Beverly Hillbillies, like Father Knows Best, Family Affair.
Wow.
Like these
Father
shows
Knows
that
Best,
were
nobody talks about that anymore.
Yeah, so like there's a lot of Gilligan's Island stuff on there, of course. Mm. I gotta wonder who's looking up Father Knows Best, who's looking up Petticoat Junction in the year 2024 and needs to know a lot of information about it. I don't know, but somebody's out there doing it. And if you're one of them, good on you. You're driving our website.
I want to see a cartoon, a comic book, a radio drama, something.
Mm-hmm.
Where Godzilla attacks America in the 1960s and our classic sitcom characters have to defend us. Like, the opening scene is Gilligan's Island. And Godzilla is pushing his way through it, killing everyone on Gilligan's Island. But, like, only the professor survives. And he, like, washes up on shore. We've got, of course, our powerhouses would be I Dream of Genie and Bewitched.
They've got all the magic powers to destroy Godzilla.
We would, of course, find out
my mother, the car, would like drive up the side of Godzilla with like bombs attached.
My favorite Martian would be revealed to be some sort of alien espionage agent who is actually planning to conquer Earth using Godzilla as a pawn, because that's what they always do. It's a good idea, and you know it's a good idea. Yeah.
And you know what? At the last minute, Buffy from Family Affair, reaches down to Mrs. Beasley and like rips it open, and there's like a button inside, and it summons King Ghidorah. Like that's what Mrs. Beasley was all about.
No, you know what it is. You know what it is at the very, very end, because you know, all seems lost. All seems lost, and we desperately need one more monster in this fight. That's when Samantha and I Dream of Genie get a grinchy idea. And they make Mr. Ed just fucking huge. So now it's Godzilla versus a giant anthropomorphic horse that can talk.
Mm.
This is the best idea we've ever had, by the way. But you know what else is a good idea?
You think you can defeat me? Of course, of course.
But yeah, back to my earlier segue. You know what else was a good idea?
What else was a good idea?
Making an anime Godzilla film.
You think it was a good idea?
I think the idea is certainly sound. We've had animated Godzilla media before. We haven't really covered it on this show because the show is about the movies. Yeah, but we had an animated series in the 70s. We had the animated spinoff of the Roland Emmerich movie, which I've actually never seen, but I've heard actually good things about. Like, I heard that was actually like a surprisingly well-written show.
Yeah.
But we've never had an animated Godzilla movie until the film that we're covering this week, Godzilla Planet of the Monsters. And this is actually a project that started off as another idea for a Godzilla series. But the unexpected huge success of Shin Godzilla led Toho to decide to turn it instead into a motion picture trilogy. So this is the first of three installments we'll be reviewing of the Godzilla anime movie series.
Yeah, and And they're all part of a very strong continuity together.
Yeah.
Like, they're all directly connected.
And there have been a lot of different ways that Godzilla has been brought to life. Obviously, Suitmation is the most popular one. There were even like some attempts, I think, or even considerations of making him stop motion, but that wasn't budgetarily reasonable. And of course, we've had CGI versions. But the thing about animation, and this is...
It's CGI animation though, yeah.
It's CG animation, but it's stylized a la more traditional anime aesthetics, which is something that... I'm trying to remember the first movie I saw do that. It might have been the Appleseed movie.
I know the Iron Giant famously did that. In animation, they... I don't think they even do this anymore, but they were referring to it as 2.5D for a second.
Yeah.
Where it was like a CG wire model, but then it was filled in with like black lines and colored to look like it was hand painted. And so it had, 3D CG movements, but it had a sort of a 2D hand drawn look. I know that that's a big part of what that movie Wish was trying to do. It was trying to make a lot of its CG characters look a little bit more hand-drawn. Of course, the issue with that film was that the backgrounds were just as detailed as the foregrounds, and everything looked really flat.
In
2D animation, the animated characters are painted differently, so they actually have a little bit more vibrancy than what's going on behind them. Wish didn't have that. Everything was at the same level. It was really frustrating.
No, a lot it's difficult to movie. Do well. It's very difficult to do this well. I think there have been enough movies and TV shows, and a lot of video games have adopted this aesthetic, that I think the style has become kind of cemented. And whether or not it is convincing isn't necessarily the point anymore. It is its own aesthetic. And I will say this, based on... I've only seen this first movie in the series, of the anime series.
Uh-huh.
But I actually think they do some really good things with it, for the most part. I think they do an excellent job of using CG modeling to create interesting angles and sort of very kind of dynamic shot compositions, interesting senses of scale. And overall, sometimes I find this technique a little distracting, but overall, I started to accept and enjoy this film's overall aesthetic pretty quickly.
Okay.
So I'll give it credit for that.
The animation style is fine. I don't think it's terribly dynamic. I think a problem with a lot of using 2.5D to animate human characters makes their faces look really kind of stiff and static. The people aren't very expressive in 2.5D.
Well,
when you get to the monsters and the spaceships and technical, like mechanical things, it looks great. Especially some of the space shots, like the design of the spaceships is really cool. And there's a lot of scenes around where they're near the end, where they're flying around in little like single pilot dogfighting space pod kind of vehicles. And those look fine. But I think a lot of the close-ups of the characters makes them look pretty inexpressive.
Well, and part of that is... part of that is a stylistic choice, and in a lot of anime, the characters are, even though the backgrounds are often very realistically painted or very detailed, the characters are not. They're much more, they're much easier to project yourself onto because they're drawn with less specifics. Also, a lot of anime, for cost-cutting measures, like a lot of American animation, they find ways to save money where they can, and so a lot of times there are a lot of less expressive moments where we're reusing a few frames or even getting away with a still shot, and so that doesn't bother me when we're going for, and indeed we're just having, since this is a Japanese film, the anime aesthetic. I can appreciate maybe not being into that, but for me, that I've never found that distracting here, because I've seen a lot of it. And I think I'm kind of used to this visual language, but in a variety of different capacities. I know you've seen a lot of anime as well, but this one didn't bug me. The story of, and we'll go into the nuts and bolts, but the gist of it, if you've never seen these movies, which were released theatrically overseas and on Netflix in America. Godzilla attacks in the late 21st century. In fact, I think they say like the last
year. It's the
year
20th
of it.
Century.
No, they said 21st.
No, it's 20th.
Well, it's weird because it came out in the 2017, so no, it wouldn't be.
It came out in 2017, but I think it's set in 1999.
I believe I wrote down that it was set in 2099. So I'm going to see if I can find out with a bit more.
Yeah, I think they're trying to connect it maybe. A little bit to the Showa, or I guess it would be more the Heisei era. But well, it's 99, and they're trying to wrap up the. Right. Like that era of Godzilla movies. And there were a couple cameos from monsters you might recognize. There's a cameo from Dogara, which I really appreciated. Yeah.
First proper appearance of Dogara in a Godzilla movie.
Yeah.
This is why we had to go cover Dogara, was for this movie.
Which I was okay with, because I actually really liked Dogara.
Dogara kicks ass. Love Dogara. All right, so it looks, everything I'm seeing online, I guess I may have written it down wrong, but I could have sworn they had said in the 21st century, but maybe I was just wrong. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so
did you watch the subtitled or the dubbed version?
Subtitled.
Okay, good. The dubbed version of this movie sucks.
I'm not surprised.
The voice actor they got to play the main character.
Yeah.
He has such an annoying habit while he does his line readings. He ends every sentence with like a little dramatic flourish, like Godzilla attacked and then we got on the spaceships and I was just so sad about everything. Like he adds this like little kind of exasperated gasp at the end of every one of his lines, and it gets really repetitive and it just sounds terrible. Well, like I'm sure he's fine in other things. He's probably a really prolific voice actor, but golly, just so bad here.
No, I watched the subtitled version. The subtitles were good, actually. I remember I had some problems with Shin Godzilla, and some people pointed out to me that because I watched Shin Godzilla on Amazon via Crunchyroll, but because it was on Amazon, apparently, that is why the subtitles were all screwed up. Okay. I haven't been able to do a lot of more research on this on my own, but I've been assured by multiple parties that subtitles falling out of sync in talkie international cinema is not uncommon when you're watching streaming on Amazon Prime.
Wow.
So I can't confirm that because I didn't watch it on Crunchyroll, but that's bad. That's really bad. That's terrible. So anyway, it's the end of the 20th century. My apologies. And monsters have emerged, not just Godzilla, but as you mentioned, Dogra, Hedorah is in there as well. A few others. The praying mantis is in there too. I think there was actually one of the Mothra movies. Yes. No, Kamacurus? I thought Kamacurus was the spider.
No, Kumonga was the spider.
Ah, okay.
Kamacurus was the mantis. Yeah.
So they both have a similar kind of cadence. I don't have much of a defense, just let me have it. But worst of all, of course, is Godzilla, because Godzilla is completely unstoppable. He's a force of utter destruction. Humanity is falling. And a whole lot of shit happens all at once. So as Earth is falling to Godzilla and the other monsters, and Godzilla is also kicking the shit out of the other monsters, aliens arrive. And not just one group. A couple of different aliens.
There's a lot of thick lore that they lay on us right away.
Yeah,
It's way dense. This movie is way, way denser than...
Yeah.
Any of the Godzilla films. And we have some pretty dense Godzilla films. I mean, look at something like Final Wars. There's a lot going on in that movie.
Definitely.
We've had aliens before, but we've never had multiple aliens and ones that live with humanity and are sort of butting heads as different sort of factions living on board a spaceship.
Well, let me get the premise out of the way just so everyone's on the same page, because we keep getting in the weeds. Real, real fast. Monsters attack Earth. Earth is screwed. We're visited by two separate groups of aliens. There's the Exif, which is a religious, almost cult-like sect of aliens whose planet had also been destroyed by giant monsters. And then there is the Bilu Saludo. I think I'm pronouncing that right. I could be wrong. Their civilization was destroyed by a black hole. So they're basically the alien species from Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla. And Terra of Mechagodzilla, I think that's their planet was dying from because of the black hole. Now, the Bilu Saludo had, and this is brushed over at the beginning, but it's clearly going to be important later, had a plan to defeat Godzilla by building Mechagodzilla. But before they could build Mechagodzilla, Godzilla's rampage became too strong, and the decision was made for all the people left on Earth to flee the Earth with both species of aliens on kind of a like spaceship arc. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And that spaceship has been going at faster than light speeds. And now all of like the children who are on that ship are now in their 20s. And at the beginning of the movie, some shit happens and they're going to come back to Earth because we haven't found anywhere else to settle, only to find out that because they were traveling faster than the speed of light, 20,000 years have passed. And Earth is now a planet of the monsters, which is a great idea. It's a really cool idea.
It's a really cool idea. Yeah, the entire atmosphere has changed. All the cities are destroyed. Monsters have taken back the Earth, and they've been living there for 20,000 years.
Yeah. It reminds me a lot of, I think it was based on a book series, too. There was a CW sort of young adult sci-fi series called The 100.
Okay.
And it was really good. I fell out of it after a couple of seasons, but basically Earth was declared unlivable, and humanity has been living over the Earth in a space station all these years, and a bunch of shit goes down, and they send, like, 100 teenagers just down to the surface of the Earth, and if it's livable, great, and if not, fuck them.
Oh, great.
But it turns out... But it turns out Earth has actually been livable for a while, and a lot has been going on down there. And that was a really, really good show, and this movie definitely has that vibe. It certainly has a similar setup. But with Godzilla in it, so, you know, better.
It's a cool setup. I know that there are a lot of... There's, like, a certain kind of sci-fi anime that is... That its selling point is that it's really complex and rich in lore.
A lot of it, yeah.
Yeah. I've said this before. I'm no anime expert. I've seen a lot of it, but I'm not, like... I don't subscribe to Crunchyroll. I don't keep up with, like, the new things that are... I'm
barely
not an anime
scratch
guy.
The surface. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot to get through. You know, it's a whole medium.
And I've seen more than you, I would think it's fair to say, and even I have barely scratched the surface. There's just so much.
But I've seen enough of the certain kind of science fiction anime that is almost difficult to absorb because they're so rich in lore.
Yeah.
And the tone of these kinds of sci-fi stories are really light. They're always very heady and very serious. So we're meant to pay really close attention to this really dense lore. And after a while, I start to get a little lost and feel a little overwhelmed. And I got a little taste of that with Planet of the Monsters. We're on the ship and we're floating through space for 20 years, but we spend a lot of time on the ship. Like, the first 30 minutes of this 88-minute film is prior to getting back to Earth. And there's all of this setup about how humanity has crumbling on board this ship. And one of the first things that happens is the captain of the ship has decided to jettison the elderly out into space and blow them up because they're running low on resources.
Sort of. That's a simplification. The actual very beginning of the movie is our protagonist, Captain Sakakai, he has taken one of the space shuttles like kind of hostage in like a terrorist act, and he's threatening to blow it up unless the government aboard this ship agrees not to jettison the elderly because supplies are dwindling. They think they're going to be lucky if they live another 8 years like this if they don't find a place to live. And they try to tell him, like, no, you understand, they're all volunteers, and he doesn't believe it. And then his grandfather is on the ship. And he says, no, actually, we did volunteer for this.
We are all volunteers,
We can't live in space anymore. We're old, and we just missed. I'm happy to die on a planet if it means I get to die on land. And what's weird is there's an interesting plot point here, and there's some mystery over it that I assume we'll delve into more later. But the ship ejects from the main ship, this like ship with all the elderly crew members in it. And it promptly blows up, like, very quickly. they were, if, and there's some question of, oh, was that part of a conspiracy? And I'm like, I'm very curious how you're going to explain that was part of a conspiracy, considering you were going to drop them on a planet to die anyway, and you were going to lose that ship anyway. So yeah. Blowing them up in front of everybody and making it look suspicious, it's almost as though making it look suspicious is the plot point. But I guess we'll see where that goes, because we do not get anywhere with that other than sort of raising some concerns about it in this film. Our hero is imprisoned for doing this. And then we spend a lot of time in basically the war room, Dr. Strangelove style. And they're talking about how we're all going to die. And there is one theory that they have. There's one thing. There's one planet that they know where they could live. And unfortunately, it's Earth. So we're just going to have to go right the fuck back if that's the case. But the problem is, what if Godzilla is still there? What if Godzilla's descendants are still there? We had no way of defeating it before. And for us, it's only been 20 years. So it's not like our technology is dramatically developed. And if we do this, we probably won't have enough power to go anywhere else. So it's an all or nothing dangerous mission.
I forgot when they figured out how much time had passed.
It happens a couple of times. They know it's been them for 20 years. And then in this opening sequence, where there's just that huge exposition dump about where we are, they talk about, there's a word they use, which is just an absolutely terrible word. The discomfort index. Double the discomfort index, life will be unsustainable in 8 years. I assume the discomfort index is some kind of tabulation or ratio that says how uncomfortable can it be to live on this ship before people
becomes completely intolerable. Yeah.
And even if we double that, we're gonna die in 8 years. So, but while they're there, they're talking about how, okay, maybe if we went back to Earth. They theorize at the beginning that it has been at least a few thousand years,
uh-huh,
Earth time, since they've been gone, because they've been traveling faster than the speed of light. Watch a documentary about Einstein sometime. And then when they return to Earth a little later, and there's plot points in the middle, and we'll get to them, they realize it's been at least 10,000 years. And then when they land on Earth and they start studying the vegetation and how it has evolved, they realize it's been at least 20,000 years.
Yeah.
Which is a somewhat unclean exposition because we're doing it three different times. But regardless, they just keep getting further and further away. There's another character in the film. And I don't think I'm going to pronounce this character's name, but it's Metfius. They're one of the alien cultists, the Exifs.
Yeah,
and he's got a very important position in the government of this ship, and he's also got a relationship to Captain Sakakai. And Captain Sakakai is obsessed with not only going back to Earth, but finding out information in old classified archives and finding a way to destroy Godzilla. And Metfius brings Sakakai the this information, and Sakakai releases like a blog on the ship's internet, which is only up for a couple of minutes, but hundreds of people read it. And it's all about how, here's how we could destroy Godzilla.
Yeah.
And now everyone thinks that we can destroy Godzilla, and now we have a situation on our hands where we feel like we have to go home. But it turns out his theories are actually not bad. They're actually like very plausible. He has discovered information that suggests that the reason why Godzilla is so unkillable is that his body,
underneath his skin.
Yeah, you know how like Godzilla can release that kind of like giant energy pulse? Well, that is also creating a sort of an energy field around Godzilla, or rather just underneath his skin, that protects him from almost any kind of harm. But if his body is generating that, that means there's a part of his body that could neutralize that is responsible for that, like an organ. And so what they need to do is find a way to just punch through that shield with laser precision, destroy that organ, and then we can kill Godzilla.
Yeah.
As strategies go, it's as good as any anti-Godzilla strategy I've ever heard.
Yeah. Here's the frustrating thing, though. There's, because most of the, you know, Godzilla's, we've said this a lot before, Godzilla's a technologically based monster for the most part, created by modern technology. And a lot of footage in the Godzilla movies is devoted to the military trying out weapons to destroy Godzilla. And the ultimate message is Godzilla may have been created by technology, but is more of a force of nature at this point. And there's a lot of exploration of that leading up to the attacks. The idea that, at least the final attacks, where Godzilla kind of crushes buildings and the people interact with it. We get to see the destruction. They get to encounter the destruction. All of the information that you gave wasn't through direct contact with Godzilla.
Mm.
It was all...
It's a lot of theories.
It's like these people are kind of postulating, and I feel like it has that kind of Saturday morning vibe. Oh, no, if we stab Godzilla with this magic wand, then we can strike him with lightning and it'll blow up. And it felt a little silly that we're getting all of this like sci-fi information without any kind of interaction or direct observation of Godzilla. It's all just, well, maybe we can do it this way.
But this movie actually has, like, it dedicates part of that. Like, this is just a theory, and they acknowledge that. And when they go back to Earth, and they're going to drop a defense force of, like, 600 people. There's, like, 4,000 sentient beings left on the ship. Very, very small amount. They're going to bring 600 soldiers down to the surface. And the plan isn't to just try this out and try to find Godzilla if Godzilla's still alive. Godzilla's still alive. The plan is to observe Godzilla and test to see if this theory will work. So we need to find Godzilla. While we're finding Godzilla, someone else in a nearby place is building a trap for Godzilla. And it's basically the trap from Godzilla Raids Again, where we're just going to bury him under rubble.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, we have to find Godzilla, and we have to use our weapons technology to attack him, but basically become like nuisances, like a bunch of mosquitoes flying around him, so that he won't be able to kill many of us. But if his shield will only come up when he is attacked, so we will attack him, we'll observe his shield activating, and if we observe his shield activating, we might be able to tell that it's coming from one place in Godzilla's body.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then our theory should work, and we should be able to kill Godzilla. And that's the overarching plan. But the plot has a lot more to do with, a lot of disagreements about the future of mankind and the future of these other two alien races, and also whether Captain Sakakai is, whether he's a dangerous rebel force or he's the hero we all need. And it's very Dune in that regard, actually. It feels like, he's either their chosen one, and indeed the character of Metvius actually does seem to be leaning in that direction. He has a line about how in his religion power stems from devotion, and his devotion to killing Godzilla is the closest any human comes to understanding their religion.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So it feels like he's kind of being, either he's the chosen one, or he's being manipulated to seem like the chosen one. Meanwhile, all of his superiors are like, that guy doesn't follow orders. Meh. And That's just a lot of intrigue right now. I'm hoping that we'll actually go somewhere meaningful, but right now it's basically, it feels like we're trying to set up our hero as a badass who doesn't play by the rules, but does only care about what's in the best interests of everybody. So you get to have a guy who's like the ultimate maverick renegade, who is also the most kind guy. There's something about that always was a little contrived to me.
Yeah, well, and the ironic thing is he doesn't really have a lot of personality. Which is fine in a Godzilla movie. We don't need heroes that have a lot of personality. But if you're going to talk about him a lot, maybe give him some. He seems
pretty bland. His personality is he wants
to
kill Godzilla. That's it. Yeah, he wants to kill Godzilla and save humanity, and he wants to come back to Earth. There's a plot point later on where I'll explain how. I'll explain it real fast. When they are initially beset by monsters on this planet. And there's a cool sequence where we're actually discovering, like, how plant life has evolved. And, like, in a world full of giant monsters, how have plants evolved to survive? They've become razor sharp. which some plants are, but this is like razor sharp, like steel. There's also a bunch of like kind of mini Godzilla monsters, not like the raptor type creatures and the Roland Emmerich ones, but like winged, long necked dragons that are a huge threat as well. Those things attack. They find Godzilla, and Godzilla is very large and scary, and that thing attacks, and it ends up killing one of the guys in charge. And now Metfius is next in line, like in terms of the chain of command, and he calls up to the space station and says, "Hey, our leader died. I'm next in line, so I'm assuming command. Do I have your approval?" And they say yes. He says, "Also, one of the officers who dropped down here failed in their duties. They disobeyed direct orders. Do I have your permission to relieve them of duty and replace them?" And they say, "Yes, under the circumstances, you go right on ahead." But what Metfius doesn't say is that he was the one who did that by letting Captain Sakakai go earlier on when he was supposed to be in prison. And so what he does is he says, "Okay, listen, everybody, I'm in charge, and in my first order of business, I am placing Captain Sakakai in charge because I screwed up." He's in charge.
Yeah, it's Sakaki, by the way, not is Sakakai.
I thought I heard them call it a Sakakai multiple times, audio.
American dub, but yeah.
I didn't listen to the American dub, but I'm gonna assume you're right, and I apologize for my mispronunciations. One of us is wrong, and it's probably me. So I'm going to say Captain Sakaki, and I'm just going to let it go.
Yeah, I was looking at the Japanese characters, and it's Sakaki. It's the three letters, so yeah.
Okay, so at some point I heard it wrong, and I'm really embarrassed now. And I'm not going to go back and redub all the times I said this character's name over and over and over again. If you're mad at me, I apologize already. I am ashamed.
We're still in a place where, and this is just sort of... for clarity's sake, we have to continue with the bowdlerized pronunciation of Gojira. We say Godzilla, and that's the way it was mispronounced in the 1950s, and we just kind of have to roll with that.
When the creature's name appears on a computer screen in this anime movie, it's spelled Godzilla.
Yeah.
Like the American spelling. So I feel like at some point they just said both of them are fine, but... but in any case, his character is so committed to returning to Earth that he's willing to use in their military strategy against Godzilla the like drop ships they use to land on Earth and risk destroying them. And his argument is, if this works, this is the planet we're going to live on anyway. And if it doesn't work, we had nowhere else to go, so we might as well be dead, which is a very sort of nihilistic point of view to have going into a battle where everyone's risking their lives. But there's a moment, I think the moment I liked best in this whole movie, though, is when they land on the planet and they're seeing what has become of the Earth, and they run into what looks like a moss-covered city. It's been 10, 20,000 years, and there's still evidence of human life. And what they discover is that the city has long since fallen to ruins, but it was covered by algae, and the algae retained the city's shape after the buildings underneath it long since crumbled. And he falls down to his knees crying and says, "The planet has always remembered us, like Earth missed us." And that's kind of sweet, actually. I found that very heartwarming, actually, this connection this character has to a place that he believes humanity belongs. I think that's really sweet, it's interesting because so many Godzilla movies take the tactic that humanity doesn't deserve to be here, we fucked up the planet, and Godzilla either is directly or indirectly representative of the Earth fighting back in some way.
I found the moment to be a little corny. I think the whole movie's kind of corny.
That's fair.
Even as Godzilla films go, I think this film's a little corny.
It's very heavy-handed. The idea
that's what I mean. It's a little heavy-handed. It's one of those films. every moment in this film is a big moment. They're really careful to like overplay every single emotional scene. Everybody's constantly weeping or screaming or crying. And it's like, calm down, dude. You know, you can't live at that speed. There's got to be a moment when you laugh a little bit, or is there any levity in this film? Because people do laugh. It's okay to be humans, and the characters are always at such a fever pitch. It's hard for me to get involved in their plight.
Yeah, and this is one of those sci-fi stories where everything is really bleak. It's like Snowpiercer. There's really no room for levity in Snowpiercer except from the villains, who have a different view of the situation. This actually, I think tonally, this reminds me a lot of the reboot of Battlestar Galactica, which
that movie of Battlestar Galactica. But
The premise of Battlestar Galactica, if anyone hasn't seen it, was there was 12 inhabited planets, and they're all inhabited by humans. And these humans had built robots, and the robots rebelled, and the robots attacked and blew up all 12 planets, and only a very small, like tens of thousands of human beings survived. Just whoever happened to be in a spaceship at the time. That's the only people who survived. Yeah. And now they are traveling together as a makeshift fleet with only one battleship to protect them. And they're trying to find a new place to live. And the gag is they're looking for a mythical planet called Earth. In the original series, it had more of a bit more 70s kind of kitsch to it, a bit more camp. It tried to be serious sometimes, and sometimes it pulled it off, but it was also kind of fun and weird. And in the reboot, which came pretty quickly post 9/11, the tone of all of these characters witnessed the downfall of humanity and the deaths of billions. And the premise of that show over time becomes very, very clear. We're watching a show where literally every character has PTSD and is doing nothing about it. There is so much intensity all the time. Every single situation that arises is completely life or death. Yeah. And that level of intensity is fucking awesome. And it can be, and it made for a really, really great show. But even that show knew you still need to have a funny bit once in a while. You need to have a funny character, like to mix it up once in a while. You need to have some, you know, people are still people and they're trying to find a way to cope.
Well, and people Godzilla are funny. Planet of the Monsters doesn't make room for that.
Yeah, exactly. But like, and this one, because they're just pushing that intensity so much, there's no room for that. And I think that's a valid way to make a movie, but I also think it's totally fair to find it oppressive and sort of lacking in tonal variety, which might affect your willingness or interest in staying invested. I think that's very, very fair. And I think if this was longer than 90 minutes, I would totally agree with you on that. Yeah, but I was able to stay engaged the whole time.
Yeah, I think what the movie needs is, I just complain about it, but I think what it needs more of is more time before we see Godzilla. What is life like on this ship? We need to see like a little bit of the society. How is the ship constructed? How do these people live? You know, what does mealtime look like? What does leisure time look like on this ship? How miserable is everything? Show that to me. Don't just say it.
I think it's interesting that you brought up that we should take longer to get to Godzilla, because Godzilla does it, aside from the prologue, Godzilla does not show up until the third act.
Yeah, Godzilla's
They're
the
talking
end.
About Godzilla constantly. They're concerned about Godzilla. They hear Godzilla's roar, but we don't see Godzilla until about two-thirds of the way into this movie.
So I guess what I would have liked is that they get back to Earth at the end of the first act. Then at the end of this, throughout the second act, they kind of investigate Earth, and we get to know a little bit more about what this planet is all about. And then finally, Godzilla shows up at the end of the second act, and then the whole third act is the Godzilla stuff. See, that way we can kind of build up to it a little bit. Like, that's kind of what they go for, but it doesn't work so well.
I feel like what you're talking about is breathing room more than anything else, because the plot of this movie is really condensed.
I want some time to, actually do, you know, the more human elements of that.
Let's get some incidental character beats, and let's actually explore this planet like we don't have a huge time crunch. Yeah. And I think that that would, and I agree, I think that would actually be a lot stronger. I think some people think that pacing is all about time. It's 90 minutes. It must be tightly paced. Some 90-minute movies are interminable.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because there are some pacing involves
4-hour movies that are breathlessly fast.
Yeah, pacing isn't just editing. Pacing isn't just one thing at all. It's editing, it's music, it's performance, it's writing. It's every aspect of the film whose responsibility is to keep the audience's attention throughout the entire running time, which is to say pretty much every part of the film.
Uh-huh.
And if all of those things are working in conjunction to the shared effect of keeping the audience engaged throughout the entire film, which means understanding when to mix things up and to surprise us a little bit, even if it's just tonally, like, oh, here's a joke to let go of the tension. If those things don't work all in tandem, that's when we create what we often dismiss as pacing issues. But that's always a more complicated thing than just the pacing is off. There's a lot of factors that go into it. And here, everything is so tightly constructed that it feels like we're watching the Reader's Digest version of this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like the Wikipedia
previously on Godzilla, kind of that sort of thing.
Yeah. It's like reading the Wikipedia page. It's all the information, but none of the flavor. And I think I liked it more than you do. I think there's more flavor than I think you're giving it credit for. But at the same time, I totally understand where you're coming from. And I do think this movie definitely could have benefited from being at least 20 minutes looser.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate it. And I do appreciate, I kind of like its narrative efficiency. You know, it all boils down to, as we mentioned, we're going to try Captain Sakaki's plan, and the plan involves buzzing around Godzilla and these cool flying motorcycles. For a minute, I thought maybe they had like updated the design of the completely unnecessary and bafflingly included flying motorcycle from Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla 2. And I even went back to Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla 2 to try to find that scene, and no, they don't look alike. It's just they're just both flying motorcycles. But all that stuff is really, really cool. They Godzilla charges up his atomic breath and kills a bunch of them. And they find out that
Godzilla in this one is like really looks a little bit like the Thing from like the Fantastic Four comics. Like he's really kind of rocky. Yeah, like rocky and craggy. You can't see Godzilla's eyes, kind of like this weird squinty face. Not really limber. Yeah. Like looks like he can barely move just because it's so the skin.
It's so ancient.
It's so ancient. Thick.
I think that's what we're getting at here. It's almost like a living statue at this point. He's been there for tens of thousands of years. And so he's still a huge threat, but he's not, you know, you hit 40 and like
when you get past 10,000, your lower back starts to hurt.
Yeah, like Godzilla's like, I tried to eat a Mothra today, and
I used to be able to eat a Mothra and just bounce right back, and now, man,
no, I'm lying on my back for at least 500 years before I can get up again. It's just miserable. I do get that impression, and it's an interesting take on Godzilla. But they find out that the shield generator in Godzilla's body is actually his dorsal fins, which is something that we have kind of consistently used all the time. Whenever Godzilla charges up, you see it, like his fins glow. Or in Godzilla Minus One, they actually like punch out of his body, like they're just like supercharged, like Wolverine's claws.
I think that was a little ridiculous, but you know, whatever.
I love it.
It's not any more ridiculous than some other Godzilla stuff.
I love it so damn much. But and so they're able to use that, and they're eventually able, with great sacrifice, to destroy Godzilla that way. And then there's another plot point, but before we get to that, I want to talk about just what defeating Godzilla seems to mean thematically here, and this feels like something that's going to be important later, because Captain Sakaki believes that the reason why humanity didn't just lose the Earth but fell into moral decay was because they had an obligation, a responsibility to save the Earth from Godzilla. And instead of fighting Godzilla until the bitter end, they ran. As though they kind of deserve their fate. Meanwhile...
I mean, there's some dialogue to that effect, but we don't spend enough time on Earth to really get that. There's no vision of Earth as, like, this degraded place.
Well, it's not Earth that's degraded. It's the people who are living in a spaceship that have degraded. But that's what he's getting. And this is all just kind of settled out. I'm hoping it'll be explored more in future films because this one's very plot-centric. But Metvius has a perspective on Godzilla as well. And his planet was destroyed by another giant monster. A giant monster from outer space. So I'm predicting King Ghidorah will show up at some point. But
I think Metvius, you might be surprised, young scholar.
Ooh, neat. Okay. It's space Anguirus. Let's do it. Metvius says that Godzilla is, quote, the punishing iron hammer for the arrogant. Like, humanity thought that they were cock of the walk, and Godzilla shows up and says, you are cock of nothing.
Well, I guess that plays into a lot of the common themes of Godzilla movies, where Godzilla appears and humanity is a little humbled. That's certainly a theme of the first movie.
Right. There's the big old fight and stuff, all that stuff. They destroy Godzilla, and it seems like everything's going to go great. We defeated Godzilla, and you know what? There might be more Godzillas, but now we know how to defeat them.
Yeah.
And it'll be easier next time. So everything is going great. And then there's a big old earthquake. And I had a theory going into this.
Uh-huh.
Because there have been a lot of kind of bizarre things with, like, the ecology. Like, oh, these creatures are, like, kind of mini Godzillas. But also, the plants have kind of Godzilla DNA in them, too. And I thought what we were going to discover is that Godzilla they were fighting wasn't the main Godzilla. It was, like, son of Godzilla, basically.
Uh-huh.
And that the entire time they were standing on Godzilla. Like, that's how big Godzilla had become. He basically become the size of the planet.
Yeah.
Not quite. I was excited when it seemed like we were going there. No, Godzilla is just ridiculously fucking huge, but he's not as huge as I thought he would be.
It's the biggest Godzilla in the entire series by quite a substantial margin.
He's 300 meters tall.
300 meters tall. That's like, what mountain is 300 meters tall? Because
I don't know. I was looking it up. There are man-made structures that are higher than 300 meters tall, but only enough. But like, there's enough that you can fit them all on one Wikipedia page without going to another page. So
list of the tallest
really fucking huge.
I've looked at this list before when we're talking about Godzilla. Let's see which of these buildings. There's like TV towers. Like, Godzilla's the size of a TV tower.
Yeah, like the giant ones that, like, scrape the sky. Like,
literally. Yeah.
It's a big fuck-off monster is what it is.
It's about the size of a mountain, yeah. And,
Godzilla,
like, it's so big, it's like Godzilla lifts his tail and, like, whips it down, and it takes, like, 10 minutes for that to happen.
It creates a shockwave that blasts for miles around.
And this one's also really craggy, and it's the first time I've really thought of Godzilla as something out of Lovecraft. We've talked about how Godzilla is this kind of otherworldly Lovecraftian thing, but the whole deal with Lovecraft's elder gods is they're so enormous and so immensely powerful and so bleakly amoral that they feel completely indifferent about humanity. And Godzilla has always had a little bit more of an intimate relationship with humanity. Godzilla's even complained about how humans are always shooting at him. This Godzilla, the size of a mountain, really doesn't care. Like, humans are just too small for Godzilla to care.
And also, he hasn't seen them in like 20,000 years. So it's like,
so humanity is completely irrelevant to Godzilla in this. And I liked that moment where, and it is just in like maybe the last 10 minutes of the movie, but where the big true Godzilla has been growing for 20,000 years finally stands up. It's like, okay, you got me with this one. This is cool.
There is a sense of scale that we sometimes forget. I feel as though we treat Godzilla like any kind of character who shows up in a whole lot of movies, they stopped treating them as entirely special. Like, it's rare that, like, a Jason Voorhees movie treats Jason as, in the later era movies anyway, as scary as if you'd seen him for the first time. We're getting kind of used to him. And that's the same thing with Godzilla. A lot of earlier Godzilla movies really played up the scale, and sometimes they do again, and I always appreciate it when they do. But a lot of the times it's also just, here's a head and shoulders, like medium close to Godzilla, just kind of looking around and going, like, there's no sense of awe or wonder to it. He's just a guy in a lot of Godzilla movies. And that's fine, but I feel like we sometimes are forgetting that this is a really powerful tool in the Godzilla movie arsenal. This enormous, overwhelming, almost mind-shattering sense of scale. And in this one in particular, you get to see all these characters who just killed a Godzilla are now seeing a Godzilla that's like 30 times bigger than that Godzilla. And they can't even process it. And Godzilla attacks. Credits.
Yeah, well, it was announced before this movie was made that it was going to be a series of three movies. So it's a good sort of cliffhanger. And I'm glad that there's going to be more, because how frustrating if the movie just sort of ended there.
And there is a post-credits scene as well, which is really short, and it just kind of teases a little bit where the next movie is going to go, where Captain Sakaki wakes up on Earth, and he is next to what looks to be a person who has been living on Earth this whole time, or at least their family has, because it's been 20,000 years. So Earth is inhabitable to human type life. And I guess that will be important later.
What did humans look like 20,000 years ago?
Well, I mean, if you look at the fossil record, kind of different, but similar.
There were already Homo sapiens 20,
were they only Homo sapiens 20,000 years ago? Well, yeah, but like there would have been some differences. But
yeah, like when Homo sapiens first emerged, like I think 750,000 years ago. I'd have to look it up, but like go to like Smithsonian website or something. But
I'm seeing if I can find something and maybe I can describe it. What did humans look like 20,000 years ago? Pretty human-y. It looks like facial structures were probably somewhat more pronounced in some regards, less pronounced in others, but yeah, pretty human-y.
It's possible that, and I'm guessing they probably, I've seen the movie before, but I don't remember this, like, actual, what they dealt with in terms of, like, evolved humanity. If the human beings living on Earth had evolved into another species, if they were no longer Homo sapiens, or if they're not going to bother with that.
From an evolutionary perspective, 20,000 years actually isn't all that long.
I was thinking 200,000 years, maybe there'd be a little bit. But no, 20,000 years, they'd still be humans.
Probably not. There will be some variation. And we've seen evolution at work. When people say, like, oh, evolution is just a theory, we've seen it literally happen.
Yeah.
But it's usually in species that have faster generations than humans do. Like, we have, humans live anywhere
about a century,
70 to 100 years, and so our genetics evolve more gradually than, say, bugs, which evolve, which have thousands of generations within a few years. So we've seen evolution occur, like species change so much that they can't even mate with what used to be considered their old species within a amount of time that humans could actually witness it. I don't know if humanity would be capable of that, but maybe. I mean, here's the thing: in order to survive in this world with a big irradiated giant monster god living on it, there may be certain physical qualities that are more predisposed to survival, like radiation tolerance. There might be some necessity involved in there. I don't know. I haven't seen the other two movies. Maybe we'll get into that. But it is intriguing. And it also once again reminds me of the TV series, The 100, which is a good thing to remind me of. For a couple seasons, I really liked that show. So that's the first Godzilla anime movie. And I got to say, clunky and dense with the exposition, though it may be, there's a lot I like about it.
Okay.
I like, and I think animation is well suited to this in particular. I think they get the scale better than a lot of other Godzilla movies that even care about scale. I think that their commitment to treating this story dead seriously is almost a welcome change of pace. There aren't a lot of even the more, what we consider the more dramatic Godzilla movies, like Shin Godzilla and Godzilla Minus One, that are even remotely as like dour as the original Gojira was. And I think this one actually comes close, even though it's a bit more like apocalyptic. It's even more apocalyptic.
Yeah.
This one is like, what if the Godzilla apocalypse we were afraid of in Gojira came to pass? What then? Yeah. And that's where we're at. And I think that's a natural extension. I think it's smart.
It's a natural extension. It's the thing I like best about the movie, that sort of apocalyptic tone. The idea that we're returning to an Earth where Godzilla has been growing unchecked for 20,000 years. That's really cool. I like that concept. Yeah. I like the way the monster looks. The complaints I've had about sort of a little bit of the static style are kind of minor complaints. I don't think they sink the film. I just think there are things I just don't really, I'm not 100% with.
Sure.
Yeah. So I don't want to sound like I hate this movie or anything. I actually like it okay. I just, the thing is, I only like it okay. for all the reasons I list. I think the style is could have been a little stronger. I feel like the characterization is a little bit weak, especially in a movie where we're spending a lot of time with the human characters.
There's a lot of characters who I'm told they're important, but I don't know why. Like, there's a guy like, this person in a suit of power armor is going to escort you. And Captain Sakaki is like, oh, no, it's her. And I'm like,
who are you?
Know her? Is she like his sister, cousin? I'm a little, you really didn't go very, I think we might have seen her in one earlier scene in like a flashback when she was a little kid, but I haven't seen her since. So I don't know what's going on or what your relationship is like. Now, this is another example where another scene would have really helped that.
Yeah, if you're going to introduce these concepts, you know, let me absorb them for a little bit.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's rushed. It's rushed to a fault. And again, you know, it's worth remembering that the original plan for the story was that it was going to be an anime series, which means they had planned to have more real estate.
Yeah.
And so what we're watching is this kind of condensed version. Yeah.
Yeah. But it does. I think the issue is that it does feel condensed, and that's
sure.
And that's, you know, basic pacing problems. I feel like the tone is a little too serious. I wanted not that I need a slapstick comedy out of my post-apocalyptic thriller. It's okay if it's sad and bleak, but again, if you're going to spend so much time with the human characters, let them behave like humans for at least a little bit.
Yeah, you're talking about, again, you're talking about tonal variety.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's a reasonable thing to want, I suppose.
So I think these are like issues with the filmmaking that's not getting me completely on its side, but I do love a good science fiction concept and the idea of a Godzilla that's as big as a mountain that's been on an Earth that has been absent humans, as far as we know, for this hugely long amount of time is really intriguing to me. So it's a good sci-fi concept, and I like that.
Yeah.
So not perfect. Cool idea. Cool monster. It's all right. It's all right.
I like cool monsters. I'll give you a lot of credit for cool monsters. speaking of cool monsters, we're going to have more of them in the next episode of Thank Godzilla It's Friday, because we're going to keep trucking along with the anime trilogy. There's no interruption. It's not like we're going to do two of them and then it's interrupted by Godzilla versus Kong or something. We're going to go through these in one after the other. The next episode the next film in the trilogy is Godzilla City on the Edge of Battle. Which is a great epic sounding title. I love the title. They have that kind of, you know, George Lucas Star Wars kind of poetry to them. You know, where it feels, just the cadence of it.
Okay.
You know, they could have called it the Edge of Battle City, and then it doesn't, then it feels like a Super Nintendo game. Like, City on the Edge of Battle. There's a poetry in that. So I'm excited about it. I'm hoping it goes in cool directions. I'm sure Mechagodzilla will be back eventually. Otherwise, what are we even doing here? But it'll be fun. And that's coming up next on Thank Godzilla. It's Friday. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you for joining us. We're thrilled to have you here. We are in the tail end of our journey. The Godzilla tail, if you will.
Yeah, we're nearly at the end here.
But we still have a lot of movies to go, and I'm excited to watch all of them. And yeah, I haven't seen these anime movies at all. These are the last ones I've never seen, and so this is the last little bit of like awesome discovery for me, and I hope you're enjoying it too. If you want to listen to our episodes ad-free and our episodes of Thank Godzilla, it's Friday 1 week early, you can head on over to patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork, where all of our new episodes are ad-free. All of our Thank Godzilla It's Friday episodes debut 1 week early. And we have a lot of exclusive shows as well, including shows dedicated to every Star Trek episode ever in order. We do commentary tracks. We just did one for Highlander 2, The Quickening, and we're going to do one for one of the allegedly worst movies ever made, Nuki, in the near future as well. We have shows dedicated to every single movie ever nominated for the Academy Awards and the Academy Award for Best International Feature. We need to have do an episode of that actually the next few weeks. But I'm very excited about it because that's a great show. I love doing that show. So thank you to all of our patrons. If the people who have, people who are supporting us financially, I mean, we really couldn't do this without you. So that it means a lot to us that you think that's worth your money. And I'm just incredibly grateful. And I hope you're enjoying the stuff on the Patreon channel. And if you want to support the show and get exclusive shows, patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork. And if you want to support the show, but you can't afford that, totally fine. Leave us a review, share an episode on social media. All of that stuff adds up. It would really mean a lot to us. And of course, if you want to talk about anything we discussed in this episode, our email address is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. Whitney, what is our P.O. Box?
Yeah, send us a physical letter to the Critically Acclaimed Network, P.O. Box 641565, Los Angeles, California, 90064. I'd be interested to hear if there were people who saw this when it first aired. This in the United States was released on Netflix, so it was pretty widely available when it came out in 2018, but I don't remember people talking about it.
So this was kind of a drop in the bucket thing on Netflix. They released them three movies and they barely told anyone about them.
So it was out there, since Netflix movies just don't anymore, it barely moved the needle. But I said anymore, Netflix films never did, but
it's occasionally, but it's rare.
Every once in a while, but for the most part, no. Did you see it? Did you discuss it with friends? What was the general consensus on this one? Because it's widely available.
Was this anyone's first introduction to Godzilla? Which would be really interesting.
That would be interesting. Yeah,
and I think that's true for almost any Godzilla movie. There's so many. There's so many different eras. The first Godzilla movie you watch is bound to be influential in how you view the character.
Yeah.
Like, this is what I assume the character was like, because this is the first one I saw. It's like I saw the first Friday 13th movie I saw was one of the ones where he was a zombie. So I assumed he was always supernatural. I didn't realize I didn't get to that till movie 6.
Yeah, yeah.
So plenty of but that's what I think is really cool about these things, is that their long legacy leads to a lot of different and interesting entryways and a lot of different and equally valid perspectives on what it is.
Yeah.
So... again, I would love to hear anyone's views on that, but we're gonna move on. We're gonna leave you. We're gonna have you go about your day. Thank you for sharing Godzilla with us on this Friday, or if you're listening to it on another day, that day instead. And never forget, roar.